Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
You have to follow label instructions, and there would be warnings on the label if, you know, glasses are needed, gloves are needed. In most cases, they would be. And you really want to make sure what you're using is the safest product you can find for that application. EPA registration is great because it means that whatever is on the label has been proven to be, in fact, true. So if the label tells you that you need to leave this on for 5 minutes, you need to leave it on for 5 minutes. If the label tells you if you get this in your eyes, you're going to go blind, it means you're going to go blind if you get it in your eyes. I mean, not to be funny about it, but the registration doesn't mean it's safe. It means the label is the law. Whatever that label says is the truth. So you really have to read your labels.
Back in 1978, Dick Van Dyke helped us learn to read our labels to set a better table. And there is no better time than the present to get that message out about our cleaning products for multiple reasons. One, so that we clean and disinfect the way that we want to during a heightened time of awareness around viruses and COVID-19, etc. And also, we might be using some more cleaning products, therefore potentially exposing ourselves to more chemicals. And it's a really good idea to know how to get the cleaning benefit out of them if we're going to expose ourselves to those chemicals. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. The voice you heard was David Bloom. He is the Chief Science Officer for Green Home Solutions. And if Green Home Solutions sounds familiar, episode 98, I interviewed Steven Stern, who is the Duluth franchise owner of Green Home Solutions, the indoor air quality company. Steve will also be joining us on the podcast today. I am really excited to have these guys on for a bunch of reasons. One, I'm really intrigued with the work that they're currently doing. When we had Steve on before, we talked about mold. That was our focus. And now we're talking about disinfection, another thing that the company does. David Bloom has been part of developing many of the chemicals that they're using, and so therefore knows how they work, understands how viruses and that kind of thing work. One of the things that we're going to talk a lot about today. Not only do you get to learn more about Green Home Solutions and what they're doing to help in stopping the spread and flattening the curve with COVID-19, as well as everything else, of course, that they're taking out with that, David helps us understand the words that we're hearing when we're hearing about cleanup or we're reading labels and trying to figure out what products to buy. What do the words mean and what can we expect out of what we're purchasing? So we're talking about what does it mean to clean, to deep clean, to sanitize, disinfect. Those words are not interchangeable. They have their very own definition, and he's going to talk about that. We talk about the tools that we use and why the actual thing that we're using to do the cleanup is important and how we do the cleanup, and a lot more about how to take care of ourselves and our environment at this time or at any time, really. So much great information here that'll help you at home, at work, at your business. I invite you to join us. Keep yourself safe, not only from the viruses and the flus and things going around this season, of course, very important, but also keep yourself safe when it comes to using the chemicals that you might be exposing yourself to. They have their own set of challenges as well. Before we dive in, I just want to say a quick thank you to all of you who listen and share the podcast with people that you think might be interested and benefit from the information that these guest experts are sharing. Yes, it is how the podcast grows, but it is also how information spreads around and finds the people that need it in one way or another. So I feel both like it's a little bit of a cheap shot and like I'm completely remiss if I don't say the next thing that comes out of my mouth, which is COVID-19 spreads like crazy, super easy. Let's take this information, the good stuff that helps stop COVID-19, and spread that just as far and wide and easy. I know from working in food service and with human beings that this is information that people just don't necessarily know. So let's get to it. Let's talk to David and Steve.
I have David and Steve with me from Green Home Solutions, and I'm going to have you both introduce yourselves. Steve, you have, if you're listening to the podcast, or a listener, you have heard Steve before. We've had him on talk about Green Home Solutions and what you guys do with the mold, mostly is what we focused on, but we're going to take a little different direction today. So Steve, why don't I have you introduce yourself again first?
Sure. I'm Steve Stern, Green Home Solutions. I'm the owner of the local franchise here in Duluth, Minnesota. And like you said, we were talking about mold before. We're an indoor air quality company. So we address what's in the air and on surfaces in your house and talk about things like sanitizing, disinfecting, and removing contaminants, stuff like that. And thanks for having us on again.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is David Bloom. I am Chief Science Officer with Green Home Solutions and also develop many of the products that we use for mold and odor mitigation, disinfection, anything that has to do with making the environment in a home safer and healthier. So what we'd like to talk about a little bit, or what I'd like to talk about a little bit, is there's a lot of confusion out there, especially now with this influx of COVID-19, on how to mitigate or what type of cleaning would be required. And I think it's important that we sort of understand the definitions here, because certain companies that you work with are going to say they clean. Somebody might say they deep clean. You may hear sanitation. You may hear disinfection. And there's a lot of mystery involved in what these things are, but they're actually pretty simple terms. So if somebody says they're going to come in and clean, that's what you would normally do on like a weekly basis. You're going to dust, you're going to vacuum, you're going to wipe things down. That's your basic cleaning. When somebody tells you they're deep cleaning, typically that means that they're, in addition to basic cleaning, they're going to clean things that don't get touched regularly. So in a home, it may be the back of the refrigerator, the back of the stove, underneath things. They're going for areas that don't get cleaned on a weekly basis, so to speak. But it doesn't necessarily get into the level of sanitation or disinfection. So when we get into those next steps, sanitation is reducing the amount of pathogens, but not eliminating the amount of pathogens. So, for example, if we started out with an arbitrary number, and we'll just say a million, because if you had bacteria or mold spores, I mean, that's actually small numbers. But let's say we had a million of these pathogens, whatever they are. Sanitation typically would give you a 4-log reduction. So that would be a 99.99% reduction in the amount of pathogens on that surface that was cleaned or treated. Or sanitize, I guess would be the word. So if we start out with a million and we did a 99.99% reduction, we're going to have 100 of those pathogens left behind. Disinfection typically indicates a 6-log reduction, which is a 99.9999% reduction. Starting with that same million number of pathogens, you're going to end up with 1. So the only thing that gets rid of everything would be a sterilization, and that's not practical outside of a laboratory or a clean room type environment. It you could never achieve it, and if you did, it wouldn't last for very long. So there's various differences along the way. It also depends on the materials, and it also depends on how the process is done. If you have porous materials, for example, you can't technically disinfect those. And the reason being is there's no way to tell that you're really getting every single pathogen or 99.9999% of them from all the little places that it could be hidden within that material itself. Now, you can sanitize material. So we know we're going to reduce the amount of pathogens. We just know that there's going to be some left behind. So disinfection is typically done on hard surfaces. In fact, if you look at anything that's registered with EPA for disinfection or as a disinfectant, it always calls for on hard surfaces. It may say that it can sanitize porous surfaces, but disinfection is always going to be on a hard surface. The other thing that is sort of important to note is that most disinfectants require the surfaces to be pre-cleaned first. So the general rule is you clean first and then you apply your disinfectant. There are some materials that are cleaners and disinfectants, so it can be done in one step. But in most cases, it does need to be cleaned, and then you apply a disinfectant.
Is that just to get all of the stuff out of the way so that whatever you're cleaning with to disinfect is able to reach everything it needs to reach?
That's exactly the case. If you have, you know, any kind of filth or soil load, the disinfectant material may not be able to reach what you're trying to get to. It can block that.
David, if I'm correct, there's a limited amount of reaction in those chemical disinfectants, and when it's spent out, it won't have treated whatever, you know, hasn't powered through, right?
Well, it depends on the type of disinfectant, what it would use. Bleach, for example, which is very commonly used, has a lot of energy, but that energy is used up pretty much instantly when it comes in contact with something. So it's likely that you would get it on the surface, but not necessarily get below that. If you want to have that disinfectant that also is considered a cleaner, when they're tested for EPA to prove their efficacy, they have to do it under an organic soil load to show that it can get through that soil load and still disinfect. But overall, you know, the best thing, the rule of thumb, is to clean first and then apply your disinfectant.
And it's also important to note that if you read the label on a lot of those household disinfectants, there are instructions like you need it to be wet for 4 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever time. And if you're, you know, just spraying and wiping, that's not actually achieving a disinfection, even if you disinfect it.
Steve, that's a very good point and something that everybody needs to be aware of. All of your disinfectants and sanitizers, for that matter, typically will have a contact time. And that's the time they were used to prove their efficacy when they got their EPA registrations. So you need to allow that sanitizer or disinfectant to remain wet for the contact time that is specified on the label. And often you're going to see 5 or 10 minute contact time. You need to let it be, that surface stay wet for 5 to 10 minutes or whatever that label will say.
I did some training on toxins, household toxins, a while back, and I was just sort of flabbergasted because I've kind of known this with a few things, but when I really started looking at cleaners and watching people clean, you clean it and then you wipe it off. Nobody like walks away for the 5, 10 minutes. If you actually read instructions of how these cleaners work, most of us aren't using them right. And I think that's even true. I haven't looked at I don't have like the Clorox wipe things, but I think that's true for that too. You know, when you clean off a doorknob, you need to not touch the doorknob for a period of time. And then my question is always, does it stay as wet as it needs to?
Well, that's a good point. Now, typically, again, when you're doing cleaning and then applying a disinfectant, that disinfectant's applied and allowed to air dry. We don't want to wipe it off at that time. We've already done our cleaning. So now we just want to let that disinfectant sit there and do what it's supposed to do. Now, that being said, when disinfectants get registered with EPA, typically they have a whole list of claims of things that they can have an effect on. The 10-minute or 5-minute, whatever that time level is going to be the worst case scenario. So often you can get bacterial, especially bacteria, which are particularly easy to clean, you know, in seconds. But if you have something with spores, like a mold spore, for example, that may take that full 10 minutes. So it doesn't always have to take that full contact time. But the only way you can be assured that that product is going to perform as the label says is by making sure that you abide by the contact time.
Okay.
And because you don't know what that other levels are.
And I think people right now are sort of in that awareness of wanting to do the best they can in those situations and have worst case scenario a little bit. I know I was fascinated watching one of the wash your hands videos. You know, the point that they were making was this is about having the soap on your hands for 20 seconds to break down the soap, to do the work, to break down the envelope of the virus takes a little bit of time. So that 20 seconds is it's actually doing work in those 20 seconds.
Correct. And now that you brought up the virus, we can talk about that a little bit. COVID-19 is what we call an enveloped virus. Enveloped viruses don't have a lot of protection around their core, so to speak. And therefore, and it tends to be a fat type material. So soap actually works really well at breaking that fat layer or protective layer, which is why it's so effective when you wash your hands. Soap is actually very good to work with viruses. or with this particular virus, anyway. Non-enveloped viruses are pretty low. If you looked at a scale of pathogens from the easiest to denature or kill to the most difficult, enveloped viruses are way down at the bottom. They're pretty simple to take care of and make sure that you can get rid of them, they won't reproduce. Although technically a virus doesn't reproduce on its own, it needs a host to reproduce. And we can get into that in a little more detail, but for the sake of argument. So the idea is that's why the CDC recommends any good household disinfectant should be effective on COVID-19. Assuming there's no filth, assuming you're getting rid of it, you know, you're cleaning first, but it's because these particles are so small, that's where it gets a little bit difficult to make sure that you get everything. Okay. And that's why sometimes it's important to have somebody come in and do it professionally that knows what they're doing, but you want to make sure whoever you're hiring is very competent to do that.
So let's talk about that, because this is, you know, we've talked about, like I said, the last time we talked to you, Steve, we talked about mold, and you guys do so much more than that. So let's talk about how does that apply? How does the work that you're doing apply to what people are concerned about right now?
Well, if you're going to have somebody come in and treat a space, and right now what we're seeing is there's a lot of businesses that are empty, there's schools that are empty, and there's an overall concern that they want these spaces to be deep cleaned or disinfected, sanitized, disinfected, whatever the case may be, so that when somebody comes back, they're walking into a clean environment. Now, granted, the environment won't stay clean once people come in because we all carry bacteria and other things with us. But at least you know that there's not going to be something there ahead of time and you're starting fresh, so to speak. So to do that, you need to make sure you've got someone thoroughly trained that uses proper personal protective equipment. We don't want somebody going into your property, your business, or whatever that could be carrying something on them. But on the same hand, we want to make sure that the worker is protected. We want to make sure that all proper protocols are followed so that everything is cleaned, disinfectants applied correctly, it's there for the recommended contact time. Anything that needs to be hand wiped down gets hand wiped down. There are several other disinfectant methods that are even sort of a step above. One of the processes that we use is a dry fog of hydrogen peroxide and a little bit of silver. And this achieves 6 log reductions on everything all the way up through C. diff. So even the pathogens that are much more difficult to get rid of than viruses are. And being a dry fog, this gets everywhere and it doesn't have a contact time with it because it's such a concentrated gas. And then the byproduct of that is essentially oxygen and a little bit of moisture. So the byproduct of hydrogen peroxide. So there's no harmful elements that are used in here. The concentration when it's applied is quite high and proper precautions are always taken when that's applied. The space is not occupied. And we put little strips around to make sure that they're indicators to make sure that everything has gotten touched the way it should be. And then you have a space with a six log reduction, and you essentially reset that environment for a clean start. And that is, you know, that's the real high level. A step down for that would be the cleaning and wiping and then applying a liquid type disinfectant for the proper contact time. You know, it's interesting because that same hydrogen peroxide, the dry hydrogen peroxide technology, is what just recently got approved by FDA for cleaning masks for reuse, for sterilizing masks.
Oh, really?
This was a technology, this particular one for the masks is from a company out of Ohio, and they have a room or a chamber where you put the mask in, they fill it with this hydrogen peroxide gas for, I believe it's a couple hours, and let the gas subside, and those masks are now sterile, and they could be retreated like that. I think it was up to 15 or 20 times. That's essentially the same type of technology we can use in an environment to make sure that we get that as close to sterile as possible.
And what I like about what you're saying about what you guys are using too is that what is left is not harmful, because that's a big thing too. We're looking at, you know, so many people are having concerns about respiratory stuff or concerns about just the toxins and what else are we breathing and taking in. And you guys are really careful with that.
You know, we work with a lot of people that are chemically sensitive. I've worked with a couple that are like, well, one in particular that had an oceanfront home that she had to give up because her neighbors were using pesticides on their lawn and it was making her deathly ill. Mm-hmm. And she literally moved to the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain with nobody around her because she couldn't have any pesticide, you know, any type of chemical exposure. And it turned out the home she bought had a mold issue. So when we get people like that, we take baby steps. You know, we'll introduce them to the products that we use, maybe spray something on a towel, let it dry, and then have them live with it for a couple of days. And if there's no reaction, we may go and do a small portion of the house that they don't necessarily go into regularly, and then have them go in there afterwards and make sure they're comfortable with it before we go ahead and do, you know, the whole treatment of whatever that process may be. And we've found that we've been very, very successful. And that's one of the things that keeps us going is the fact that we can help people like that, that are sensitive to a lot of typical chemicals. I mean, this woman could not be exposed to virtually anything without going into like an anaphylactic shock.
And we're seeing that so much more. I mean, so many more people are dealing with that.
Yeah. So it's a real problem. And it's nice that we're able to do that. But you do have to treat these people differently, and it takes a lot more time. But like I said, we'll take baby steps to make sure that nobody's going to have an exposure issue.
For somebody listening to this, and, you know, like you had mentioned, schools and businesses, and I think this is a strange time. We're not quite sure how long things are going to be closed or whatever the case might be. Thinking of the average everyday person, you know, how does this apply to them? How is this helpful to them?
Well, for the typical homeowner, assuming that you're staying at home, you don't have anybody, or as far as you know, nobody's infected with COVID-19, you want to practice basic cleaning techniques where you want to make sure things are clean. You do want to use disinfectants periodically on your counters, on high touch surfaces, doorknobs, all these things that could potentially be contaminated. And one other thing you want to be aware of is with people staying at home, and a lot of times it's you have your children there because schools are closed, there's a buildup of carbon dioxide, and that can actually affect your health in such a way that is detrimental also. And one of the brilliant ideas, I mean, opening your windows is always great if you can. Depending on your climate, it may not be something that you can do without worrying about energy. But one of my colleagues, which is Bill Hayward, who has a website called the Hayward Score, which gives you could go online and get an idea of what your exposure is to general pollutants. Not we're not talking about COVID in this case. But he had a suggestion that we found worked very well, is if you can open a window, just a crack, just enough so that you can feel a little bit of air in the back of your hand, and you do that at one end of your house, and you do the same thing if it's a one floor, you do it at the other end of the house. If it's a multi-story, you do it on the upper floor. That tiny little bit will be enough to stimulate fresh airflow through the property. It wouldn't have a major effect on your temperature, whether you're heating or cooling, but would allow that carbon dioxide to get down to normal levels. We're not normally having this many people in a home all the time. So there are, you know, that's just a natural pollutant that comes from us exhaling. Mm-hmm. And it's important to make sure that you clean that also.
Wow.
I don't think I answered your question.
The continuation of that would be what you're talking about doing with Green Home Solutions. How does that apply for us as the average person, be it in our house? But I think also going back to a business, you know, if you have a business of your own or you're going back somewhere that's been closed up, you know, how do we think about how this applies to us in general?
Well, I mean, if you either for your home or your business, again, the idea would be if there's concerns to chart it to reset that environment back to a starting point. And that can be done with a good professional disinfection procedure to make sure that you've minimized pathogens in general, not necessarily just COVID-19, but any other types of bacteria or molds or anything like that could be handled all at the same time. And then at least you know you're starting fresh. And granted, if somebody came in and reinfected that environment or recontaminated that environment, you would have to take some additional steps. But it would give you at least a sense of knowing that you're starting clean and that there's really nothing to worry about at this point. I mean, we're exposed to things every day. This is getting away from COVID for a little bit, but if you're outside and you walk in, you're carrying mold spores with you. Mm-hmm. Anytime you touch something that somebody else touched or a surface that's not clean, you could be carrying bacteria with you. That's a normal part of our lives. In fact, our bodies thrive on it. We have more bacteria in our bodies than virtually anything else. It's not necessarily a bad thing. So we're not looking to create sterile environments permanently. But after something like this, where the potential exposure is very detrimental, it's nice to know that you've got a clean start.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is something, it's good to point out that this is, you know, pre and post COVID-19, this is science that Green Home Solutions has been pursuing, you know, professionally to bring to homeowners and businesses. The big difference is just that there's a new contaminant we're talking about. And so we're coming up with new, you know, kind of common sense and clean ways to deal with it.
I do have a question that I'm curious, because I was just hearing about something the other day that has to do, I don't remember what the illness is called, but I guess it has a lot of similar symptoms to COVID-19, but it's something that comes from if a place has been infested with mice. And so I guess it's like common in hunters when they go to clean out their cabins and things like that.
There is something called hantavirus.
Okay, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah, that can be particularly troublesome. It's in fact, it can and sometimes be deadly. It's not found typically in all parts of the country, but it is, and I off the top of my head, I just don't recall where it's more common. But that can be addressed with typical disinfection techniques also.
Okay.
And that, you know, in those kind of cases, having something that you can sort of aerosolize to the point where you can clean that entire cabin, for example, without have to, you know, physically disturbing anything to make sure that you denature that virus is very effective.
In a lot of cases, David, up in northern Minnesota, when we say a cabin on a hunting lease, we're talking about like a plywood shack that's on like a paper company land. You know, they just lease the right to put it up, and there's like very temporary. I know guys that go to these things and they always come back with allergies and sick because they're moldy, they're full of mice, they're like the worst of building science. It's just a wood box out of the woods. Yeah, I think I saw that article too. Where did you see that, Judy? Because I think I know.
Somebody had just mentioned it to me that they were concerned because they were noticing that they were having symptoms, and they were like, well, this is weird. And then they ended up cross-connecting with this illness, and they're like, okay, I don't think that that's what's going on, but
no, probably not.
they had mice in their house, but not an infestation of mice in their house. they were living there the whole time, so I'm sure it's not what's going on. But it was curious. So, okay, right now, who are the people that are getting a hold of you, and who do you expect to be helping and really working with and benefiting as time goes on? I'm like, is there particular industries or particular people that you see? You know, obviously anybody can benefit from a reset. You know, if you've lived in a house for a bunch of years, it just sounds lovely to just reset kind of that whole environment. But, you know, who do you see that you really want to be able to reach out to and really help
right
through this?
Well, right now, as a local franchisee, immediately we're most interested in talking to businesses that are really essential, need to stay open, need to offer their employees and customers some level of safety and safety and assurance that there are spaces that are still needed to be used, such as grocery stores, dentist office, things like that. I actually just sent an email to the general manager of the Duluth Transit Authority this morning, just saying, you know, we do disinfection and such, and we're curious if any of your spaces, areas need treatment. I've been talking to pretty much anybody. I think the more spaces we get in touch with our assessment and services, the bigger difference we can make, and hopefully stopping not just the spread of this, but, you know, every other thing we've been trying to stop the spread of. mold and allergens and bacteria?
There's actually been a lot of inquiries from all different walks of life, pretty much, so to speak. Municipal buildings that have been closed down or not being used entirely have typically asked for our services. A number of police departments and fire departments, these people are very concerned with what they're exposed to or what they could be bringing back into the building. And these are the type of facilities that, when they're in use like that, that need to be done on a recurring basis. In some cases, it's once a week. We've got one particular place that every night they go in and just re-wipe down everything and apply a disinfectant to it because they want to make sure that every day there's not going to be an issue. We're seeing this from the real estate market, which is having trouble showing houses nowadays because people are afraid to go into someone else's home, mm-hmm. or they're afraid to go into an empty home, not knowing what could have been left behind. Those are getting treated prior to doing showings so that the real estate agent can say, hey, look, this house has been disinfected. We've got, you know, it's a clean unit. Then the client is not necessarily afraid to go through there. There's all sorts of opportunities. Ambulances have been one of the one of our franchisees has been doing a number of work with them. And again, they're, you know, they're getting contaminated on a regular basis. So this is done on an ongoing type service.
So is that something that you guys come in and do, or is it something that you might buy particular products to do some version of this yourself?
Green Home provides services as opposed to products. Most of the products that Green Home uses are proprietary to them, and they're not available on the market. They're very, very low toxicity. They're very, very effective. They're all quite special. But we're a service provider as opposed to a product sales point.
Anything else that you feel is really important for people to understand about kind of what we're dealing with, the time that we're in with COVID, or even just in the work that you're doing related to COVID, or in general, that is helpful for people to understand right now?
Well, one thing I would just like to advise people is that if they're doing this themselves, they really need to be careful and take precautions for a number of reasons. Number one, if you think you have a COVID-infected environment, then it's probably beyond your capability to make sure that you're going to handle that properly, and you should talk to a professional. If it's not a COVID-infected environment, but you're concerned with just overall disinfection and keeping it clean, make sure you read the label of the products you're buying if you're doing it yourself. There's a ton of stuff out there. Some is safer than others. You have to follow label instructions, and there would be warnings on the label if, you know, glasses are needed, gloves are needed. In most cases, they would be. And you really want to make sure what you're using is the safest product you can find for that application. EPA registration is great because it means that whatever is on the label has been proven to be, in fact, true. So if the label tells you that you need to leave this on for 5 minutes, you need to leave it on for 5 minutes. If the label tells you if you get this in your eyes, you're going to go blind, it means you're going to go blind if you get it in your eyes. I mean, not to be funny about it, but the registration doesn't mean it's safe. It means the label is the law. Whatever that label says is the truth. So you really have to read your labels.
You know, that might be one more thing actually, David, to kind of define for people is what's, you know, EPA registered means or CDC approved means, because I think people take all kinds of stuff out of those terms and then they get thrown around on labels. Like I've seen emails come through with people saying we're using an EPA registered product for something kind of unrelated to the virus, and it confuses the conversation a lot.
Well, sure. An EPA registration is a process that you go through. It's expensive. It's time consuming. But you have to prove efficacy. You have to make clear what the toxicity of that product is, that it has a shelf life of a certain amount of time. All these things go into what is actually the label. And the EPA as an agency essentially is assuring the user, the public or whoever it is using that product, that whatever is on that label has been proven. Doesn't mean it's necessarily safe. Well, it should be safe if used as directed, but you can have very toxic chemicals that are EPA registered. It's just they have to tell you about the toxicity so that you're aware of it when you're using it. Now, CDC has recommended, they've vacillated slightly. They've said that any good household disinfectant should be fine for residential use on taking care of what we're talking about now with COVID and disinfecting. They did emphasize hospital-grade disinfectants, which means that the registrant has taken an extra step to show that they could kill an additional bacteria that is a little bit more difficult. When we talk about registrations and how this works, it's often you can't test against everything. So it's looked at sort of like a pyramid. So if the most difficult thing to kill is at the top of the pyramid and everything else underneath it is less difficult, then the assumption is if you can kill that one at the top, you can kill everything down at the bottom. So if you wanted to make a general disinfectant claim, for example, there's several bacterias that you need to prove that you can kill, and then you can say you're a bactericide, you're a general disinfectant. You add another bug, and you can say it can be a hospital-grade disinfectant. You add a fungus, and you become a fungicide. But the ones that you're testing against are pretty high level. Now, in order to make a claim against a specific thing, you have to then test against that specific bug in addition to having the surrogate, meaning the higher level ones. Because there's no test for COVID, and or at least not one that can be done at this point in time, it's generally assumed that anything that would be effective on a enveloped virus would be certainly should be able to take care of that. And again, enveloped viruses are relatively easy to handle compared to other pathogens that most products go after.
And just for clarity, you said there's no test for COVID. And what do you mean by that?
Well, when you're doing your testing to get a label claim, EPA has very specific testing that needs to be done against that particular bug. That has not been developed yet for COVID, and I don't think any lab would want to touch it right now anyway, because of, you know, how contagious this is, or how easy this is spread. So I'm guessing it'd probably be a couple of years before that. But that's where, again, they look for surrogates. So if you could do other viruses that are similar in physical structure, so to speak, then it is assumed that you would also be able to denature the COVID. So in this case, if you have proven that you can kill, kill is a funny word because viruses technically aren't alive. But if you can have an effect on an enveloped virus, then you can apply to EPA to get the emerging pathogen claim on your label so that you can, you know, then make that COVID claim.
Okay. Two questions pop up in my head after some of the last things you've said. One of them is when they talk about household cleaners, this is one that vinegar, because I know a lot of people use vinegar and water, vinegar is not effective for COVID.
No, vinegar would be much less effective than just soap. And it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning of the conversation, where the virus has sort of a fatty kind of layer, a protective layer, and soaps are very good at breaking down fats like that. Mm-hmm. Vinegar is not very good at that. So you're much better off with a soapy solution than you would be with vinegar.
And the emulsification you're going to get by scrubbing the counter doesn't work.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for that because, again, physical removal is good. So that goes back to the clean first and then apply disinfectant rule, because you're going to remove a good portion of it when you clean. Now, one thing that is very important, especially for a homeowner, is you need to turn that rag constantly to avoid cross contamination. So you always want a clean surface. When you wipe, then you fold it over and you wipe again somewhere else. That's fine. But if you wipe one surface and wipe the other surface without doing that, then you're going to potentially cross-contaminate that second surface. The other thing is that's a sort of important is what you're using to do that wiping. So if you were trying to absorb something, so this would be in the cleaning process, a cotton rag, paper towel, something that absorbs liquids is most effective way to do it. If you're looking to saturate something, which would be applying the disinfectant that you're going to let air dry, a microfiber towel is much better at doing that because it doesn't absorb as much. So you always want to make sure you're using the right tools for the job.
Okay. And that is really important. We do not hear much about that. Like that, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, the point I want to do is that if you're a Green Home Solutions franchise owner, you hear tons and tons and tons and tons about this. And that's kind of what defines us, I think, as, you know, experts in the field of cleaning, sanitizing, disinfecting versus, you know, cleaning companies or someone that just does mold remediation or something like that. You know, I've spent endless hours of my life learning about studying these things because we are really always kind of looking for the best possible solution we can provide a customer for these concerns.
Right. Yeah, you always want to make sure you have the right tools.
The other thing that I can imagine somebody listening to this and you're talking about, you know, refreshing your environment and thinking about a house and what we're hearing about COVID and the times that things live, which I keep hearing different things. And I'm sure that we're learning more all the time. I mean, this is a new thing. This isn't science we just can drop in. We're trying to figure this out, at least how I understand it. But I can imagine somebody saying, okay, well, if I need to refresh my home, might it just work if we all go away on, you know, leave the house for 7 days and then come back? Isn't that going to just kill? Obviously, it's not going to do anything for the mold, for instance, but viruses and some of those things. So is that a solution?
Yes and no. Okay. And the reason I say that is there has been some testing done to determine how long the COVID virus can survive on various materials. Mm-hmm. And the longest, the ones where it survives the longest, I believe, were plastic and stainless steel. But even that was typically, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I think it was 72 hours for stainless, I think was the longest one. But that was conducted under laboratory conditions. That wasn't what you're going to necessarily deal with in a home. And it could be that it lasts a lot longer. We don't know that for sure. So that iffy factor is okay. Scientific word is in there. I don't know if I'd be real comfortable with that. I mean, probably, but you don't know for sure. Because again, I know that copper was only a couple hours. Cardboard, I believe, was 48 hours, if I'm not mistaken. Plastic and steel were the longest, but again, that test is done under a laboratory condition. I'd be really hesitant to say that after that time period is expired, that everything is perfect.
That's helpful. Anything else that we're missing?
The only thing I wanted to mention, and this goes back to when we were talking about somebody coming in and doing work. I noticed on a lot of the news shots I've seen where we've got people walking around with electrostatic sprayers, which are these little battery operated guns, applying, I'm assuming, disinfectants. They work well because electrostatic, what it does, it puts a positive charge onto the liquid it's spraying, and anything that's grounded has a negative charge. So it sort of wraps around it. The issue that we've found when we did some work in a laboratory with them is they tend not to get enough material on to stay wet for that contact time. So I would just be a little bit leery of that procedure if that was one of the options presented to me.
Okay.
Because the contact time is very, very important.
Do you want to share how to connect with you? And one of the things that I know, you know, Steve, you have always been really open and available for people as a resource in our area where that you work and beyond. How do they reach out to you? And are you willing to field some of those questions?
I think I would just share that the website, greenhomesolutions.com, can connect anybody anywhere in the country to the closest Green Home Solutions franchise. And then we have our phone number, 1-800-SOLUTIONS. Which they can connect you again to whoever the closest local franchise is.
And if there's any specific questions that have to do with the science or anything like that, or just general knowledge, then they can always ask for me, and I'll certainly make sure I get back to them.
Perfect. Thank you both.
Judy, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been really great. I appreciate it.
Again, you can connect with Green Home Solutions at greenhomesolutions.com. Their phone number again is 1-800-SOLUTIONS. Thank you for listening. I hope you got some great stuff out of our conversation. If you're new to the podcast, you could find us on iTunes or anywhere that you're listening to podcasts. And of course, the website, wellnessrenpodcast.com. And you can certainly join the email list and we'll pop an email in your inbox whenever we put out a new episode. If you're an Amazon shopper, you can go to the Support the Podcast page and get to Amazon through the affiliate links there. It's a great way right now. I know many people are shopping Amazon more than normal, and it's a great way to support the podcast at no cost to you. And of course, if you like what you hear and you'd like to support the podcast, I would be extremely grateful. And you can do that on the website as well, going to the Become a Patron red button on the left, and then, of course, choosing your level. We just added last week a great discussion with our last week's guest, Gail Francis. She wrote a book called Blisters about her 2,700-mile hike from Mexico to Canada. And in the Patreon extra, we talk about her actually going through the process of publishing her book and her audiobook. So check it out. Have a beautiful week. Take good care. Stay safe. Do what you can to support the small businesses and the people who are really struggling at this time, who have lost their income or portions of their income or businesses. I know this is a really tough and uncertain time for everybody. So if there is anything you can do, even if it is thanking those people in the grocery store who are out there doing the work, whatever essential job people have, thank you very much from me. And it's a great way to just let them know that you're aware of them putting themselves out there. Take care of yourself. Do what you can to flatten the curve. And maybe this will get back to some semblance of normalcy sooner rather than later. May you continue to find pieces that fit easily and safely into your health and wellness puzzle. See you next time.